Kings, chapter 22. So we begin one book and we end another. 1 Kings 22 is the final chapter of that book. And so we begin with 2 Kings, Lord willing, next week. 1 Kings, chapter 22, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. And they continued 3 years without war between Syria and Israel. And it came to pass in the 3rd year that Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, came down to the king of Israel. And the king of Israel said unto his servants, Know ye that Ramoth in Gilead is ours? And we be still and take it not out of the hand of the king of Syria? And he said unto Jehoshaphat, Wilt thou go with me to battle to Ramoth-Gilead? And Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, I am as thou art, my people as thy people, my horses as thy horses. And Jehoshaphat said unto the king of Israel, Inquire, I pray thee, at the word of the Lord today. Then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, about 400 men, and said unto them, Shall I go against Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or shall I forbear? And they said, Go up, for the Lord shall deliver it into the hand of the king. And Jehoshaphat said, Is there not here a prophet of the Lord besides, that we might inquire of him? And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, There is yet one man, Micaiah the son of Imlah, by whom we may inquire of the Lord, but I hate him, for he doth not prophesy good concerning me, but evil. And Jehoshaphat said, Let not the king say so. Then the king of Israel called an officer and said, Hasten hither, Micaiah, the son of Imlah. And the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, sat each on his throne, having put on their robes in a void place in the entrance of the gate of Samaria. And all the prophets prophesied before them, and Zedekiah the son of Kenaanah made him horns of iron, and he said, Thus saith the Lord, with these shalt thou push the Syrians until thou have consumed them. And all the prophets prophesied so, saying, Go up to Ramoth-Gilead and prosper, for the Lord shall deliver it into the king's hand. And the messenger that was gone to call Micaiah spake unto him, saying, Behold, now the words of the prophets declare good unto the king with one mouth. Let thy word, I pray thee, be like the word of one of them, and speak that which is good. And Micaiah said, As the Lord liveth, what the Lord saith unto me, that will I speak. So he came to the king. And the king said unto him, Micaiah, shall we go against Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or shall we forbear? And he answered him, Go and prosper, for the Lord shall deliver it into the hand of the king. And the king said unto him, How many times shall I adjure thee that thou tell me nothing but that which is true in the name of the Lord? And he said, I saw all Israel scattered upon the hills as sheep that have not a shepherd. And the Lord said, These have no master. Let them return every man to his house in peace. And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, Did I not tell thee that he would prophesy no good concerning me, but evil? And he said, Hear thou therefore the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing by him on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, Who shall persuade Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? And one said on this manner, and another said on that manner. And there came forth a spirit, and stood before the Lord and said, I will persuade him. And the Lord said unto him, Wherewith? And he said, I will go forth, and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And he said, Thou shalt persuade him, and prevail also. Go forth, and do so. Now therefore, behold, the Lord hath put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these thy prophets, and the Lord hath spoken evil concerning thee. But Zedekiah, the son of Kenaanah, went near, and smote Micaiah on the cheek, and said, Which way went the spirit of the Lord from me to speak unto thee? And Micaiah said, Behold, thou shalt see in that day, when thou shalt go into an inner chamber to hide thyself. And the king of Israel said, Take Micaiah and carry him back unto Ammon, the governor of the city, and to Joash, the king's son, and say, Thus saith the king, Put this fellow in the prison, and feed him with bread of affliction and with water of affliction until I come in peace. And Micaiah said, If thou return at all in peace, the Lord hath not spoken by me. And he said, Hearken, O people, every one of you. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and enter into the battle, but put thou on thy robes. And the king of Israel disguised himself and went into the battle, but the king of Syria commanded his 32 captains that had rule over his chariots, saying, Fight neither with small nor great, save only with the king of Israel. And it came to pass, when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat, that they said, Surely this is the king of Israel. And they turned aside to fight against him. And Jehoshaphat cried out. And it came to pass, when the captains of the chariots perceived that it was not the king of Israel, that they turned back from pursuing him. And a certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. Wherefore he said unto the driver of his chariot, Turn thine hand and carry me out of the host, for I am wounded. Then the battle increased that day, and the king was stayed up in his chariot against the Syrians, and died at even. And the blood ran out of the wound into the midst of the chariot. And there went a proclamation throughout the host about the going down of the sun, saying, Every man to his city, and every man to his own country. So the king died, and was brought to Samaria. And they buried the king in Samaria. And one washed the chariot in the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood. And they washed his armor according to the word of the Lord, which he spake. Now the rest of the acts of Ahab, and all that he did, and the ivory house which he made, and all the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Ahab slept with his fathers, and Ahaziah his son reigned in his stead. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa, began to reign over Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhi. And he walked in the ways of Asa, his father. He turned not aside from it, doing that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. Nevertheless, the high places were not taken away, for the people offered and burnt incense yet in the high places. And Jehoshaphat made peace with the king of Israel. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoshaphat and his might that he showed and how he warred, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And the remnant of the Sodomites, which remained in the days of his father Asa, he took out of the land. There was no king in Edom. A deputy was king. Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish to go to Ophir for gold, but they went not, for the ships were broken at Ezion-Geber. Then said Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, unto Jehoshaphat, Let my servants go with thy servants in the ships. But Jehoshaphat would not. And Jehoshaphat slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David his father, and Jehoram his son reigned in his stead. Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and he reigned 2 years over Israel. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the way of his father, and in the way of his mother, and in the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. For he served Baal, and worshipped him, and provoked to anger the Lord God of Israel, according to all that his father had done. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Well, kind of a long chapter. That means we'll be increasingly brief in our comments, or we'll try to do that anyway. So verses 1 through 14, we have the introduction of Jehoshaphat and Ahab together as a force to go up to Ramoth-Gilead and to conquer it, to take it back from the Syrians who had possessed it illicitly. Jehoshaphat desires peace between the two kingdoms, which may not be a bad desire, an evil desire. Let us also understand that it is that we want to avoid the peace at any cost kind of mentality, the peace with compromise mentality, and so on. And so Jehoshaphat, we don't want to accuse him of doing something evil here. We will leave that in the hand of Jehu and in the hand of the other prophet. What was his name? Eleazar of Dodava. And we'll talk about that in a few moments. There were two prophets that actually rebuked Jehoshaphat for his associations with Ahab. And we'll see that a little bit later. So he goes up, and I think that one of the more important things to notice in this first section is that Ahab is still operating on the principle of that everything is relative, that it could be good for you and bad for me, and so everything is up for grabs. There are no absolutes, and so what the Lord has said, well, you know, really what we want to do is we want to make that like he did with Naboth's speech and so on. We just want that to be arbitrary and not authoritative. And so we have this same thing going on here. What do we have? Well, we have Ahab musing with Jehoshaphat. I want to go up to Ramoth-Gilead and I want to take that. And, you know, I'll be fair with you, Jehoshaphat, if you go with me. Yeah. And I think Jehoshaphat behaved himself very naively in all of that association. But be that as it may, Jehoshaphat says, well, let's inquire of the prophets of the Lord. Notice L-O-R-D caps. Okay. So Ahab, notice it's been 3 years at least since Mount Carmel. So he's got another 400 guys. He's got another 400 prophets to help him prophesy for Baal. And so he calls them in. Shall we go up to Ramoth-Gilead and prosper? And they all say, yes, go up. Yeah, most definitely. The Lord has indeed given you victory. Go! They're unanimous. And this is when Jehoshaphat stops the proceedings. And he says, is there not here a prophet of Jehovah? Of Yahweh? Of the Lord, L-O-R-D caps? Can we inquire of him? And remember what Ahab says? Oh yeah, there's one. There's one guy left up here. You know, we've chased them all out but one. His name is Micaiah. He's the son of Imlah. And I hate him. I hate him. You know why I hate him? Because he never prophesies good for me, only evil. Again, Ahab takes the word of the Lord and makes it arbitrary. Naboth won't give me his vineyard. What did Naboth say? The Lord forbid it me. Remember all of that? Okay, so Ahab is still making the word of the Lord an arbitrary thing. And so Jehoshaphat says, let not the king say so. In other words, you should want to hear what the word of the Lord is. Would you rather have 400 lying prophets or one true one? That's the point. And so Ahab sends for him. And the servant that goes to get him, he says this. Let me paraphrase. I've learned from my master Ahab that all things are arbitrary. So why don't you speak the same way that the prophets do and we'll all be fine. That's kind of what he says. Make sure that your word matches theirs, in other words. Notice that Micaiah is a prophet of principle. That which the Lord says to me, I'll speak that. Nothing else. So there is something absolute. There is a light still remaining in the northern kingdom, even though it's in the days of wicked Ahab and Jezebel. And so Micaiah comes in, and Ahab asks him the fateful question, shall we go up to Ramoth-Gilead and prosper? Now, I don't know exactly what Micaiah did, whether he changed the intonation of his voice, or whether he looked over at the 400 prophets and he said, Oh yes, go up to Ramoth Gilead and prosper. And so immediately, Ahab turns to Jehoshaphat and says, see, I told you. He never prophesies anything good concerning me. It's all arbitrary, don't you know? One prophet says this, another prophet says that. And so, that's when Micaiah begins to tell the story. The vision that he saw, the first vision that he saw, was Israel scattered upon the mountains as sheep without a shepherd, and every man returning to his own fold. That's the first vision. And that's exactly what we see long about verse 36. Every man to his city, every man to his own country. That's the first prophecy. Then the second prophecy, and this is after a little bit more exchange between Ahab and Jehoshaphat, the second prophecy of Micaiah is really the most detailed. And that's when he says, well, I saw the Lord sitting in this vision that I had. And there was a proclamation that went out from the Lord. Who will entice Ahab that he may go up to Ramoth-Gilead and fall, not prosper? And one spirit said this, and another spirit said that. And then this one spirit stood up, and he said, I will. And the Lord said, well, how are you going to do that? And he said, well, I will become a lying spirit in the mouth of all of his prophets. So by them, he will be enticed to go up and fall. And the Lord said, that's a good plan. You go do that. Now, this passage has given trouble to a lot of folks. The Lord is commanding a spirit to go lie in the mouth of Ahab's prophets. Yes, that's exactly what the Lord is doing. And the Lord is guiltless. Because he is just and right in all his ways. You say, well, Pastor, you're just equivocating on the word justice. Well, be that as it may, I don't think I am. I think what I'm doing is showing that the Lord can send a lying spirit. He can send strong delusion that they should believe a lie who receive not the love of the truth that they should be saved. The Lord is sovereign. The Lord is not... Dr. Clark, in his comments on this passage, says that the Lord is ex lex. He's outside of the law. He's other than the law of God. He's not subject. He is not underneath the law of God. Because if he was underneath the law would be God and not God would be God. The Lord has taken his own morality, his own perfect moral verity, and he has given to us the moral law so that we would follow it, and in following it, learn to be more like him. But it is at best an adaptation of his own pristine morality. God can do something like this and be blameless. We cannot. We cannot command someone to go sin. We don't have that authority to go and tell a lie. But the Lord commands the lying spirit to go and be a mouth of the and fill the mouths of his lying prophets, Ahab's lying prophets, so that he will go up to Ramoth-Gilead and fall. Now the events of the passage, as that history is described, make it clear that the Lord is pursuing the death of Ahab, and the Lord could have done that in a myriad of ways. But let me remind you of this one thing in this narrative. Yes, the Lord sent a lying spirit to preach falsehood in the mouth of Ahab's prophets, and he also sent one good prophet to tell the truth. So let's not forget that part of the narrative as well. And Ahab had enough reasoning, had he been a godly man, to hear the one over the 400. So there's another thing that happens here. This confrontation between one of the prophets, Kenaanah, and Micaiah. And remember that this guy Kenaanah was particularly vociferous. Zedekiah the son of Kenaanah, and he's the guy with the iron horns earlier in the passage, right? He's the guy that said, "With these, you'll push the Syrians out of Ramoth Gilead." You know, all very dramatic. So Zedekiah, the son of Kenaanah, comes over to Micaiah and strikes him on the face. Sucker punches him. And he says, which way went the Spirit of the Lord from me to thee? Of course, mocking his true prophecy. Micaiah doesn't seem to be the least affected by it. He says, well, you'll understand. You'll understand when you're hiding yourself in your inner chamber. That's when you'll understand. It wasn't the Spirit of the Lord that came from you to me. It was the one that came from me to you. You'll understand that. And so then, Ahab says, take this guy and put him in prison and feed him with the bread and water of affliction, which meant nothing, until I come back. And Micaiah, true to form, says, if thou return at all in peace, the Lord hath not spoken by me. In other words, I'm a false prophet. If you return in peace, stone me, please. Hear this, all you people. He doubles down, doesn't he? Micaiah does. Okay. So Micaiah is shuttled off to ward, and Jehoshaphat and Ahab go to battle. And here it becomes, it is the theater of the absurd. Because Ahab says to Jehoshaphat, now I don't believe a word of what Micaiah said. We're going up to Ramoth-Gilead. But just in case, why don't you dress up as a king, and I'll just dress up like a regular soldier. So no one will know it's me, and everybody knows you're the king. And Jehoshaphat says, okay. This either speaks of a wondrous and miraculous confidence in Jehoshaphat or incredible naivete. I think it's the latter, and I think he's rebuked by the prophets for that. So they go up, and the first thing they do, the Syrian army, they see the man in the robes, and notice in the history, as it's recorded for us here in this inspired fashion, that the king of Syria has said to all of his captains over all of his chariots, don't you fight with anybody except Ahab, the king of Israel. That's the one I want. Don't worry about anybody else. I don't care if you kill a man of them. Cut the head off. That's his order. And so, they see the man in the king's robes. They think that's Ahab. They get ready to slay him. Jehoshaphat says, I'm Jehoshaphat, I'm not Ahab. He cries out, and they perceived. I don't know how they perceived it, because if we know what we know about Ahab, he would gladly have said, I'm Jehoshaphat. Right? This has to be the Lord's protection upon Jehoshaphat at this point. And so they let Jehoshaphat go. They can't recognize Ahab. He's out in the field somewhere, like a regular soldier, probably in a place where the battle's not too hot, protecting his life. And so a man draws a bow at a venture. A venture is not a particular bird. He just draws it and shoots it. I haven't shot anybody all day. Let me just pull back and see how far I can shoot an arrow. And it hits Ahab between the harness of his armor plating. So in other words, it goes in that little crevice where there was no armor. Tell me this is not of the Lord. And Ahab begins bleeding out in his chariot, and it takes him the rest of the day to do so. And they bring his body back in the chariot and bury him in Samaria. And the dogs lick up the blood according to the word of the prophet, which was spoken two chapters ago. Notice also that once the shepherd of Israel was dead, everyone went to their tents, which is what it says in verse 36. Thus ends the life of Ahab, and Ahaziah, his son, reigns in his stead only for a couple of years. Switch scenes. Southern kingdom now. We're going to give a brief summary of the life and reign of Jehoshaphat until the end of the chapter. And I'm after time here, but I do want to mention a couple of things here because it's important. So in the first part then, we hear about Jehoshaphat making peace. We hear that he's a good king, that he did many upright things, that he continued in the ways of Asa, his father. He even did some things that Asa refused to do. He put the Sodomites out of the land. Don't ever let anyone tell you that this is a modern invention, sodomy. No, he put them out of the land. The other thing that is a criticism of Jehoshaphat is that the high places were still left. The people still worshipped on the high places. It is not said what they worshipped on the high places, whether that was Jehovah himself or whether that was indeed some other god. But the high places remained, and they were unlawful. even if it was Jehovah worship going on up there, it was still unlawful. So that remained, and that is a criticism of Josiah. Now there's another interesting event here, and this is the Israelite Navy. Israel developed a navy in those days, and the other passage that you should read if you want to follow up on this is in 2 Chronicles chapter 20. Okay, if you want to follow up, just write that down toward the end of that chapter. We hear a little bit more detail than we do here. So we believe that there are basically three separate events here. The first event is this, that Jehoshaphat joined with Ahaziah and said, you know, Solomon, he had some pretty good trade with Ophir. So let's put a navy together so we can sail to Ophir and get gold like Solomon did. We can trade. And so Jehoshaphat formed a league, again, with a northern kingdom king. Hadn't learned his lesson yet. And so the Lord sent a strong wind and destroyed that navy. Just brought it to nothing. And then Ahaziah said to him again, well, let's not be thwarted from our purpose by such an event as the destruction of our joint navy. Let's build it back up again. And so that is when Eleazar, toward the end of the chapter, rises up toward the end of 2 Chronicles chapter 20, rises up and rebukes Jehoshaphat for joining himself to the king of the northern kingdom. So three separate events. Now, if you read the two passages together and compare them, that I think is the best interpretation and meshing of those two passages. They build a navy with joint expense to go and to do some joint trading. That navy is destroyed by the Lord because it is an illicit association that Jehoshaphat has made. And then there is a second offer by Ahaziah to do the same thing. And then the prophet rebukes Jehoshaphat, and he will not join up with Ahaziah the second time. As for the other rebuke of the prophet, again, that is not in this book. It's in 2 Chronicles. And that is when Jehoshaphat is returning from his time with Ahab. So it would be between verses 40 and 41 of our chapter. And that is when Jehu the prophet is sent out against Jehoshaphat upon his return to Judah. And he says to him, shouldst thou help those who hate the Lord? And so twice during his life then, the king was rebuked by the churchmen. Well, of course, that has wonderful outworking in our own history as Presbyterians, doesn't it? When we think of Andrew Melville standing before James VI in Scotland and saying to him when he wanted to obtrude his services in the worship of God, remember Andrew Melville's words to him, thou art God's silly little vassal. You don't reign in this church. Or as Andrew Melville said it, you don't reign in this kirk. Right? Okay, well, thus ends the long reading of 1 Kings chapter 22.